Are you a questioner, a wanderer, or even a bit of a snooper? If so, then you'll feel right at home in Knoxville. We've got miles of trails to wander in our urban wilderness, award-winning eateries to satisfy your culinary cravings, cultural sites to open your mind, and dog-friendly activities that'll have everyone wagging. Knoxville, calling the curious. Learn more at visitknoxville.com.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Dark Forest. If you're new to the channel, consider subscribing. Tonight, around the campfire, we have the Darkest Hour joining us for a spooky tale. If you like her narration, her information will be in the description box down below. Now, let's get spooky. My friend Miranda and I were having a sleepover over at my grandmother's house. She lived in rural North Carolina on 3 acres with a mountain on one side and miles of woods on the other. The only road in her neighborhood was on the back side of her house, where the wraparound porch hugged the formal living room and a converted bedroom where guests could stay the night. The lot in front of her house that spanned over 4 miles was undeveloped and wild. We started off the night watching TV and reading teenage magazines, but it was truly abysmal timing. We didn't know it, but we were just about to outgrow each other, childhood friends by proximity alone. At around 10-something, my grandmother went to sleep. We watched her take a sleeping pill and out on Nick at night. Her small dog, Lolita, slept beside her already. She couldn't sleep without my grandfather, and after he died, the pills knocked her out. Miranda decided, after not paying attention to the show that she had put on, that we should go outside. It was rainy and windy, but it had finally stopped. We tiptoed through the long hallway and closed the door to the mudroom, and put our boots and raincoats on. She flopped around in my grandmother's, and I put on my own shoes. We walked for a bit past the patio furniture, past the empty chicken coop, and past my grandmother's shed. The property was well kept to the perimeter fence, and we hopped over and made our way into the woods. We walked for a few seconds, and I looked back towards the house. It disappears quickly, and we hop in the puddles and shine our flashlights at the trees, walking quietly and looking around, hoping to see an owl or a deer. I can't help but feel uneasy. I'm acting brave to save face. Miranda is almost 12, and I'm barely 10. I've never been out here without an adult before. The woods become thicker, and we lose the path completely. I know, I've never been this deep in the woods. And she just wants to go farther and farther, our lights illuminating less and less. As the forest becomes denser, the rain picks up a bit, and the wind moves the trees around us. We see them sway, but hear nothing. It's scary when you're out in the woods all alone in the middle of the night. It's even scarier when between steps you hear leaves crunching and branches snapping. Miranda looks back at me and whispers,
"Was that you?"
I shake my head and we listen intently. The rain and the now audible wind make it so hard to zero in on the movement in the distance. I'm so scared my heart is beating in my chest, and we are both frozen. I want to be back at the house, playing in the back bedroom, watching Law and Order and eating snacks. I turn off my light as the sound gets closer, and I back up slowly. I don't feel Miranda behind me anymore, and I turn around and she's gone. The branches are breaking, and the crunching and squelching of the wet ground is so loud I want to cry. I want to scream. I see her a few feet back. She looks at me, her light still on. She shines it to the side of us, and she takes off running, leaving me alone in the woods. I sink to my knees, the cold water soaks my pajamas under the raincoat, and cry silently. I hear something run somewhat past me to my left, and I hold my breath and sink deeper into the ground. The crunching sounds move farther the way we came, and eventually I stop hearing it altogether. I sit on the floor for a while, and I feel the rain starting up again. The wind knocks my hoodie down, and the rain is so cold on my face. Cold water drops down my back, and I shiver. I walk back the way I think I came, and look around the entire time, feeling eyes all over me. I didn't turn on my light. My eyes had finally adjusted to the dark. It had to have been almost an hour since Miranda and I got separated, and I was so upset that she had left me. There was a huge tree that was struck by lightning a few years ago, and a big chunk of it toppled over. It's a landmark I remembered seeing when I ventured back here with my cousin, a few hundred meters from their house. I see the white fence behind the trees, and I run the last few feet out of the woods. I ran as fast as I could to get to the house. I tried the knob, and the door was locked. Miranda locked me out of the house. I knocked on the door, and nothing. No lights on in my grandmother's room. I hope Miranda will hear me, but the rain is pounding so hard. I'm sure it sounds like a whisper in the darkness. I suddenly feel sick to my stomach. I feel eyes on my back. I turn around, but I don't see anything but the normal yard stuff to sheds, chicken coops, and white fence, and the wall of trees. I'm so thankful for the visibility, but I'm so scared that I'm outside alone with whatever ran by me after Miranda. After a few minutes, I see a light come on in my grandmother's room. I'm so relieved. She wears a hearing aid, so chances are she didn't hear me knocking. And Lolita was so afraid of the storm, she was probably shaking in the tub, not worried about me. I see her old face in rollers, and I wave my hands, desperate to get her attention, looking back towards the fence line every few seconds. I feel the hair on the back of my neck raise, and I feel invisible danger. I feel so scared. She finally looks up and walks old people quickly to the door. She unlocks it and lets me take a step in before standing in front of me asking what happened. Why was I outside in the rain in the middle of the night? She's fumbling with her hearing aid, waiting for an answer, and I scoot past her. I tell her I wanted to get something I left out earlier and the door must have closed unlocked. Walking down the hallway, I quickly grabbed towels from the closet and took off my clothes. I walked to the end of the hall, looking out the windows. There was almost no visibility, just the thick trees and condensation on the windows, the whole time feeling so exposed. Miranda is sitting on the bed watching TV, soaked in sheets and not a bit concerned about me. I throw her a towel and she takes off her raincoat finally. We get clean, dry sheets and we lie in bed beside each other, neither of us talking. She faces the road and the porch, and I face the wall. We lie like that for a while, until I hear her gasp and push back against me. Not knowing what was going on, I whisper what her problem is. She points to the window, which is illuminated every time by thunder striking in the sky. We see something on all fours walking on the porch, stopping in front of the window. Then we see this vague silhouette behind the curtain. I never thought about the opacity of these curtains, so hiding in the dark room, I'm hoping it can't see in. We stare when it last stands or crunches as it moves and flashes. The sky is bright one second and dark the next. It moved somewhere else, still trying to look in. We are frozen in bed, not moving, not talking, not even breathing. But it just stayed there for a while. Then a lightning strike clapped hard in the sky and it was gone. We stayed up for hours and waited for whatever it was to come back. It never did. In the morning, Miranda got ready early. She brushed her teeth and got dressed, all before my grandmother even woke up to make us breakfast, which it seemed she had no intention on waiting for. She told me that her mom was on her way to pick her up, and that she had dance practice. But I knew that she didn't want to be here any longer than she needed to.
Are you a questioner?
a wanderer, or even a bit of a snooper? If so, then you'll feel right at home in Knoxville. We've got miles of trails to wander in our urban wilderness, award-winning eateries to satisfy your culinary cravings, cultural sites to open your mind, and dog-friendly activities that'll have everyone wagging. Knoxville, calling the curious. Learn more at visitknoxville.com.
I asked her why she ran away, why she just left me by myself and locked the door. She kind of just stared at me for a moment and then kept packing up. She said she heard something moving in front of us, and she saw something moving when she shone her light over there. So she ran, and when she finally got to the house, she did not think it would make any sense to keep the door unlocked so whoever or whatever would just come in and take her. I was taken aback by her cowardness and selfishness. She didn't even think of me, of my life, or my fear. Not even that it was her idea to go out there. We didn't talk anymore, and her mom came before too long. We never hung out again. She moved on to cooler friends, and eventually my family left the state. But every time I'm in the woods, I can't help but think about what was out there with us. How close it seems we could have come to ending up dead. I'm posting this because I need to tell someone about the last time I saw my best friend Jason. Back in high school, Jason and I were inseparable. We took all of the same classes, went to the smoker's pit at lunch for our midday cigarettes and the occasional joint, skipped classes together, and since he lived next door, we hung out with each other like every morning and night. That wasn't until the middle of 12th grade. See, 12th grade was when Jason started dating Patricia. Patricia was your typical quiet girl who always had her nose stuck in a book. Her looks were very plain, but she was wicked smart. And when you got to know her, you realized she was one of the nicest people. In new relationship fashion, he began to change. He quit smoking because she asked him to, started pulling up his bootstraps up in class so no more screwing around or skipping. Each night he would go over to her house to study, but knowing her, they probably actually did study. This left before school and weekends for us. That was until he started meeting her before school, bringing her breakfast and spending the weekends with her, reading and hanging out with her family. It hurt, but I understood this happening with new relationships and high schoolers in general. It had been 2 months since they had started dating, and 3 weeks since the last time that we had hung out, when he showed up at my house. He climbed up to my window at 3 a.m. knocking loud enough to wake me up, and even though he did it frantically, he was soft enough not to disturb my parents. I let him into my room and I asked him what was up. Jason had a crazed look in his eyes, almost as if he was about to become unhinged. "They're going to get me, man. They're going to get me," he frantically told me. I grabbed him by the shoulders and asked him what the hell was going on, and who was going to get him. "The people in the trees." This was when I started thinking. With him sounding this crazy, he must have been having a terrible high. "Hey, you're safe here. Why don't you just come lay down? I'll get you some orange juice and help you ride this thing out," I tried to reassure him. He turned back around, staring out the window out at the trees outside. A gentle breeze blew the branches ever so slightly. Jason got up running towards the window. He started screaming, "It's not safe! It's not safe!" over and over and over again. He suddenly jumped out the window 2 stories. When I made it to the ledge, he was already limping, running away. My parents came in because of Jason's screaming. I didn't want to rat him out, but I was worried given his state. They went over to his parents, and when they hadn't seen him, the 4 of them called the police. It's been 5 years now since that night. Even with all the searching, news reports, and Facebook posts, no one had seen him. That was until yesterday.
I was doing some hiking in a national park a few hundred kilometers from where I saw Jason last. I do this trip a few times a year just to de-stress, so I know this place well. This time, I decided to take a secret trail that only regulars of the park knew. It's always quiet and comes to a peaceful scenic waterfall. During my hike, I was reaching a bend in the path that led to the last little bit of the trail. I heard slurping and tearing noises coming from up ahead. I knew there were bears in this forest, which is why I always came prepared with bear spray. I pulled it out of my backpack and proceeded forward cautiously. I came across a clearing while hiding behind some brush. In front of me, I could see someone on the ground. They looked like a hiker from the boots they were wearing. Someone in severely tattered clothes was hunched over the top half of the body with their back to me. I called out asking if they needed help, as from what I could see, it looked like there had been an accident. When the hunched over figure turned around, my stomach dropped to the floor. "Jason?" I asked, surprised. He didn't respond. His black sunken eyes pierced into mine. It was Jason. His facial features looked the same as they did the day he ran away from me, but his skin was dried and peeling, almost translucent in some places. Blood covered his mouth and neck, and he had little bones jutting out of his forehead reminiscent of a crown. I stared at him, and then I stared past him at that half-eaten corpse behind him. "What the hell is going on, Jason?" I screamed. As I turned ready to run away, a man and a woman jumped out blocking my path. They both had dry, peeling skin and wore tattered clothes. The man's nose looked like it had been ripped off and had scarred over whereabouts the woman had a jagged bone pierced through her jawbone. I backed up as fear gripped me, tripping on something and falling back, cracking my head on a rock and passing out. I woke up for a split second with the man and woman knelt over me with hunger in their black, soulless eyes. And then again, when Jason pulled them off me. When I finally woke up for good, it was pitch black outside. I got up and ran as fast as I could back to my car. I made the trek in 2 hours when it was usually 3. Rustling followed me for a little bit off the path all the way until I exited the forest. I got in my car, turning it on. As the headlights reached the tree line, I could see Jason standing there staring, making sure I left. I know Jason had pulled those creatures away, saving my life. And I'm pretty sure he protected me all the way back. My best friend protected me even when he wasn't fully himself anymore. I don't know what to think of this. I put an anonymous tip into the police when I got back, about where the hiker's body was. But I knew if I said anything else, no one would believe me. I'm turning to you guys to at least tell what no one else will believe.
A family of Bigfoot used to live on my aunt and uncle's property in eastern Washington. From the back patio of their house, I'd watch them with binoculars as they'd casually travel in and out of the forest clearing, sometimes carrying large branches with them, back and forth. There were 4 members in this Bigfoot family, and they all had thick brown fur and ranged in size, the tallest Bigfoot easily being close to 8 feet tall. Over the years, as they became more aware and comfortable with our presence there, the sightings of them became more and more frequent as they'd go about their routines. They never tried to interact with us, and we sure never tried to approach them either. We were happy spectating safely from 100 yards away. My uncle was able to amass quite a collection of tapes that he'd...
Are you a questioner, a wanderer, or even a bit of a snooper? If so, then you'll feel right at home in Knoxville. We've got miles of trails to wander in our urban wilderness, award-winning eateries to satisfy your culinary cravings, cultural sites to open your mind,
and dog-friendly activities that'll have everyone wagging. Knoxville, calling the curious. Learn more at visitknoxville.com.
Recorded from his handheld camcorder. He had shoeboxes filled with stacks of grainy footage that he was able to capture over the years. He was proud to play them for any neighbor or friend that would stop in. Back in the 80s, there was no YouTube that you could put your video on for the world to see. Back then, when you recorded a video, your audience was whoever you could fit in your living room to watch it. He even went as far as giving the Bigfoot family names. Tim, Tom, Lucy, and Bill. Bill was the biggest. Lucy was a bit shorter. And Tim and Tom were equal height. My uncle swears that he could identify and separate each member's tone when he'd hear them communicating with each other. We all knew Bill's roar because it was the deepest and loudest. Levels above the other grunts and hollers that would echo through the trees. Most of the time, this Bigfoot family stayed silent. But one humid July night, we heard Bill let out a sound that shook our windows. Then, all of them started going wild. My uncle barges into my room, asking if I hear what's going on outside, and if I can see anything out my window. It's dark, but by the little glow provided by the moon, I can see none of the Bigfooter in the 100-yard clearing. My uncle tells me to stay in my room as he fumbles to put a new tape in the camcorder and rushes out the back door. Then, from my window, I watch my aunt join him on the patio while he anxiously pans his camera across the tree line, as the forest continues to emit sounds of chaos. In a gasp of shock, I hear my aunt point out something running through the branches, fast. My uncle turns his camera, and we see either Tim or Tom rip into the clearing from the trees. He's screaming wildly and coming right for the house. My uncle doesn't budge. He keeps his camera fixed on the fast-approaching Bigfoot. I put my face up against the glass, and I watch this creature get 50 yards from the house when it suddenly collapses lifelessly into the grass. Then I notice another figure emerge from the tree line, but this one doesn't resemble a Bigfoot. It was much smaller. From my view, this new figure walking towards the Bigfoot body looked like a human. As the figure neared, its head jerked up in the direction of my aunt and uncle. This made them both dash inside and lock the doors. They both came into my room and watched as this figure grabbed the Bigfoot's leg and dragged it back into the darkness. One by one, the shouts and roars became fewer and fewer until the forest was silent again. The next day, there's a knock on the front door. I'm sitting in the kitchen, eating cereal, and my uncle answers it. From the kitchen table, I can see standing in the doorway, there's two men in black suits and fedoras. They look identical to each other. Pale skin, sunken blue eyes, and no eyebrows. Their faces completely hairless. Their appearance scares me enough that I take my cereal into my uncle's room and I eat it in there. Moments after I close the door and continue to eat, my uncle opens the door. I greet him and I tell him I won't spill cereal on their bed, but he ignores me. His eyes don't even look over at me. Walking past the bed, he makes his way to the closet, where I see him retrieve his shoeboxes of tapes. He maintains his glossy stare as he exits the bedroom. Following behind him, I poke my head out the door and I watch him hand over the shoeboxes to those scary men. When they leave, the dazed look on my uncle's face fades away, but he immediately becomes violently ill and spends the remainder of the day asleep on the couch. Later, when I tried to ask him about the two men in suits, my uncle wouldn't give me any more information, only that those men needed my tapes. Any further questions of mine were met with, "I don't know, but it's best we don't concern ourselves with it." My aunt and uncle passed away in the early 2000s, without me ever getting more answers. We didn't talk about the event or the Bigfoots, not after that. I still live on the property in eastern Washington, but I've never had a Bigfoot encounter since that night. And if I do, I don't think I'll be filming it.
What defines Ohio? A place that dares to go first and never looks back. There's no slowing us down. In Ohio, we're powering America, discovering breakthroughs, driving the future, propelling tomorrow. At Jobs Ohio, our mission is clear: strengthen job opportunities and empower Ohio's workforce. Ohio, our time is now. See Ohio's momentum at jobsohio.com/ohio's time.
Are you a questioner, a wanderer, or even a bit of a snooper? If so, then you'll feel right at home in Knoxville. We've got miles of trails to wander in our urban wilderness, award-winning eateries to satisfy your culinary cravings, cultural sites to open your mind, and dog-friendly activities that'll have everyone wagging. Knoxville, calling the curious. Learn more at visitknoxville.com.